I'm going to talk a little bit about my own PhD now, and it was really this whole idea of humour and how we use it in child and youth care work. I do have to apologise for the graphics. I don't know what's going on, but it's not translating from here to there. So there might be things that we can't see. I suppose where this came from me was two things, really. A good time ago, maybe 10 or 12 years ago, I noticed that I was going to say I used humour a lot, but I tried to use humour a lot. It was part of a thing that I was doing with kids. And I just sort of copped on to that, but I didn't really explore too much until probably 6 years ago. I was in Nova Scotia with Tom. We were driving around, hanging out, and he started to push. Are you going to do this PhD? When's it going to start? Within 20 minutes, the topic was there. The sort of themes to be looking at were there. And it was just quite incredible how natural, you know, for a flow for me it was. Because it's a thing that I think most people do in residential care. In all forms of care, we use humour. So I started off thinking, well, you know, why do I want to think of it? Firstly, because I do it. I try to do it. And secondly, because nearly everybody I know, and definitely everybody I know who's good at it, they use humour. So that's the starting point. Okay, here's the thing, let's try and understand it. And the fact that there really wasn't very much written about it at all. My own background is in psychology, psychotherapy, as well as the child and youth work. And there's quite a lot written in terms of psychotherapy, in terms of even the medical professions, in nursing, emergency wards, how humour is used. But it's mostly about how it's used for the person that's using it, what they get out of it. If you think about emergency wards where they're dealing with trauma the whole time and how the staff, how the nursing staff, how the doctors have this banter, okay, because it helps keep them sane. There are some universal truths about humour that we, you know, I found very quickly, and the way I carried out my research was to go and ask people who are working with kids and to ask people who I knew that were doing this and who I knew were doing it well. So like I say, humour occurs in most, if not all, residential settings, and I think it's a vital part of the work that we do. It has the absolute potential to completely enhance a young person's life in the everyday moment, okay, but also to take away those memories, and like Tom talks about, you know, maybe one of those humorous interventions is a thing that changes a young person's life forever. So you can see where this is going. You think you're coming in here to have a bit of a laugh, and it's actually very serious. Definitions of humour. That's where we start, isn't it? We're going to talk about our key concepts, or, you know, so we're picking up the dictionaries, going online, trying to get a definition that we can use. No. There are so many, it's so broad. And can I just ask, anybody there, any thoughts on how you would even start to define humour? Probably shouldn't have done this, but something about humour that you can say as a trait or a characteristic of humour.
Makes me laugh.
Something that makes you laugh. Absolutely.
Coping mechanism for dealing with stress.
Absolutely, it's a coping mechanism. Can be, for sure.
It can be risky.
It can be risky. There's so many aspects and concepts. When I try to look at humour, it just bamboozled me completely. We were looking at intellectual functions of humour, social functions of humour, and it just got quite crazy. But I still needed a definition, do you know? And I found this quote from over 100 years ago. Hardly a word in the language would be harder to define with scientific precision than this one. And he goes on to say, and it's usually in the English language that we're talking about, been very difficult to define this. But you know it when you see it. Or when you know it, when you hear it. So I have a couple of examples of something that I find funny, but you mightn't. So I'd play at least one of these anyway. Just a few, Tom.
Yeah.
Right. Some people find that funny, others don't. And then you have to ask yourself why. And one of the things that jumps out is it's the incongruence of it all. You know, we talk about congruence in our work, and yet when we find something that is incongruent, you know, it can bring such an amazing effect. We can laugh, we can feel good, you know. The next one I won't play, because I played it earlier, and it got a mixed reception. I'm also told that Leon's probably going to be using this at some point as well, so I don't want to be stealing his thunder. The way I have written up the research is firstly to talk about some of the concepts that have come through, comments that people have made, okay, just the general concepts, and then I've tried to sort of define those in terms of themes. But some of the observations that were made, I just found these interesting. Child nuclear needs humour. This was something that everybody that I interviewed said in one way or another. It's needed. It's required. Effective use of humour is a skill or a trait that people have. I worked with a guy from Cork and he just had it, you know, and he just couldn't. I couldn't get this for a long, long time. I just couldn't get how this guy could connect so well. And it was just those little humorous little statements that he was able to make, you know. And what happens is sometimes people come along and try to repeat that. You might tell the same story that Jono would say and it just wouldn't go well, you know. It's a skill. It's very much dependent on context, okay. Reading situations, it's all the daily life event stuff, you know, that reading the situation, noticing what's going on, and if we get it wrong, by God, we can get it wrong so bad sometimes. Humour can be a safe approach, okay, and for me, the safety out of it came from the fact that I found comfort in it. I found that I could approach kids about very serious issues in a way that was non-threatening for them. It made them feel safe, and that made me feel safe. And staff need to understand why. And this was interesting, you know, through the interviews. I thought it was a very reflective thing for people to say, you know, sometimes we don't know why we do it, but we need to. And I was asking that question, who's it for? Is it for the kids or is it for us? So my five categories, okay, the daily life categories that I've tried to group, the care element, okay, we used humour, we can use humour to tend to this whole idea of just the element of care in caring. The daily life event element, just that moment in time, how we live our lives with kids. The crisis, okay, we talk about all these forms of crisis intervention. Humour and learning, it can be a powerful learning tool as well if we use it appropriately. And for ourselves then, this was a thing that we kept coming back to. Most of the time we do it for the young people, but sometimes it's for ourselves, and it's important to recognise that, I think. So, in terms of the care experience, as a way to express caring and compassion, I know starting off as a 21 or 22 young fella looking after these 17, 18-year-old young lads, you can't go up and say, you know, I really care about you. You probably could, but you might get a beating. But I found that I was able to give them that message, you know, by spending that time with them, and they could get that. You know, this guy does care about me enough to make an idiot out of himself sometimes. To comfort and to make the care experience feel safe. You know, it can really bring down a tone, you know, if we can do that. If we have a banter, myself and Tom have a bit of a banter, you know, the kids see this and think, gosh, you know, maybe it's a bit safer than we thought it was going to be. Following on from that, being able to project that positive setting, we used to be very conscious of, when we meet new kids coming in, that we would just really promote this whole humour thing, because these kids would be coming with this concern. Initially, I worked in the detention centre for 10 years, and, you know, they were brought out by the police in handcuffs a lot of the time, and we just wanted to get that, you know, move that away very, very quickly. And as an alternative to force or authoritarian approaches. Now, again, there's a bit of overlap in some of these. Now, I have them defined in the thesis, which hopefully will become a book at some point, but I'll keep you informed of that. In our everyday, connecting in a relationship, okay, self-explanatory, confirming trust. I had a nice story I was going to tell. I don't have time, but it's a story that Mark Fredo told a couple of years ago on how he used a little bit of humour with a kid who was really in a very bad place. He'd built a relationship with this kid on the telephone, in the same room as a kid, on the telephone, and I used a little bit of humour at the end of it. Just, I found it was an amazing story. To equalise and humanise, what could be more equalising than having a laugh with a kid, sharing that joke, you know, investing with them, being with safely, again, that's that whole idea of there's no threat here, and when we have issues, reconnecting, okay, and restoring. In terms of crisis prevention and crisis intervention, this was a term used by one of the interviewees, you know, pre-diffusing. So it's, you know, there's something going on, the atmosphere isn't great, you know. There's nobody's done anything or said anything, but it's brewing, okay. So you can sit them down and tell them a silly story or tell them a joke, and you're just diffusing a lot of that. To overcome resistance, that's when you get the truculent kid. They're just backing themselves in the corner. They haven't really done anything, but they're shaping up for it, okay. And then when you have the blowout, okay, and I use humour quite a bit with the kids, particularly the kids that climb up onto the roofs and they threaten to do all sorts of things, you know, just to cajole them back down, you know. It's just a thing that works really, really well. In terms of learning, some of the psychosocial programmes that we run, the staff will say how they will use humour and funny examples to get across a message. But, you know, sex ed, drugs, whatever it is, they can put a bit of humour in it. The kids remember it better. And how we can model it with each other, because quite often kids will use nasty humour, tendentious humour, aggressive, sexualised humour, but we can role model that and they can learn how to use humour themselves. And for staff, as a need for coping, it's like you were saying, we do that. Viktor Frankl spoke about in the times of the Holocaust when he was in the concentration camps how the Jewish people used humour. Do you know, they set out every morning to have a laugh, to have some funny story for each other, and that's, they say, well, you know, got a lot of people through that horror, and it is something that is used in quite a lot of emergency medical facilities. And this, to overcome embarrassment, okay, this was actually a theme that came up with three or four of my interviewees. In this particular program, when kids would come back from a home visit, come back from court, whatever it was, they had to be searched, this sort of tile search, you know, and everybody found that very uncomfortable. And it was amazing the amount of stories that people related about the funny little things that they'd done with these kids who were sort of like just standing there naked except for a tile around them, you know. Things about smuggling guns in, and, you know, you looked like the sort of guy who would have like an AK-47, just silly little things which mightn't necessarily have been funny, but they were embarrassed about what they were there doing, but it had to be done. And I just thought it was an interesting one that sort of came up time and time again. So I've covered about 17 or 18 uses for humour, and there's probably an awful lot more. It's like with the characteristics of effective child new care, there's 25, 30 minutes, but there's probably a lot more. We'll find them, we'll come to them over time, and we'll add them in. But there's a lot of concerns, and it was mentioned there earlier, you know. We have to be careful with it. It's a really double-edged sword at times. A lot of time you need to have a relationship. Sometimes it's great to get a connection, but sometimes you have to have a relationship. You can take humour to a certain point, but sometimes you just have to pull it back if you're not there with a young person. Again, like love, it has to be genuine. It can't be forced. Something's either funny or it's not. You can't make something that's not funny funny. Should never be hurtful or sarcastic. Timing, do you know? I was going to tell a joke there, but I haven't really time to tell that joke on timing. Again, this is about paying attention to feedback, okay, how it's been received, monitoring that, and you might have to go a completely different direction. If you're using humour, you know, you just have to maybe get out of Dodge real quick and change your approach. So monitoring the humour reactions. It can be very much abused. People will say, oh, sure, I was only having a bit of crack with you. I was only having a laugh, do you know? So it can be very much abused, and to be aware of that. And can be very, very dangerous. It was actually Jerry Fuster said it could be like a nuclear bomb, do you know, if we don't use it properly. So I think I'm within time, and I'll send you off with an Irish blessing. We had a good bunch of people over in Ireland last year, and we had the whole St. Patrick's Day weekend coming up, so I'm still in that sort of mood at the minute, you know. I didn't get a chance to really enjoy it because we were working so hard, but just want to send you all that Irish blessing, and thanks very much for your attention. Anybody, any thoughts, any questions, reflections? No, that's okay, thank you.
What are you supposed to do if you're not very funny?
Get a new job. But no, seriously, I don't think it is. It's really not about being funny, is it? It's about being prepared to take the chance. It's about prepared to make the effort to put yourself out there, because you're really vulnerable when you do that. do you know, a kid can just turn and say that to you, you know, you're really not funny, you're really not funny, and that could sort of, you know, hurt you, do you know. But no, I think it's about taking the chance. I don't think I'm particularly funny, but, you know, I'm prepared to make an idiot out of myself, do you know. Bob.
John, can I just say, I mean, no argument with any of the issues that you mentioned there. I agree wholeheartedly. One of the things I thought you might have touched on in terms of the humour is that I would have thought at the top of the list is the ability to laugh at oneself rather than tell jokes, you know, for the sake of survival,
sure,
but also for all the other reasons that you've outlined.
No, I think that's a great point. One of the first articles that I'd written on humour, again, pushed into it by his nib, as you know, and it's actually in one of the little Daily Life books, was a story that I tell about how I made a complete idiot out of myself, you know, to try and get a kid from a place that, you know, was very self-destructive. So it is one of those things that certainly comes into it, yeah, and maybe I should look at how I deliver this type of a presentation to Kim. Thanks, Bob.
If you're going to have a joke, take the mickey with him, that young person is very astute at giving it back. Mm. And if you're not able to take it, they will get it right there and then.
Yeah.
And they will use it against you. So you need to be willing to sort of rub yourself in the mud.
Oh, really? Yeah, for sure, very sure. So. It's like horseplay. We used to have this be a bit of horseplay with the kids, do you know? It all doesn't happen anymore, the physical stuff, do you know? Because some people just couldn't take it. Do you know, it got to a point where it got silly. Someone would get hurt and then a kid would end up getting being timed out and all sorts of sanctions and stuff. So, yeah, I know. And it can be so, so dangerous. In the wrong hands, it's just lethal.
Do you think it's a skill that you can teach?
It was interesting because people said you can't really teach it, but I do think you can develop it. You know, over time, by watching and by learning and by everything else. You know, we learn to walk by walking. We learn to run by running, you know. So we learn to use humour by using humour, but it's about attending to the feedback, isn't it, and being prepared to change and being reflective. It's like every skill that we use with kids, you know, we have to see if it works for us, if it works for them. I don't think you can probably particularly teach people to be funny. I've spent the last 40 odd years trying to teach myself to be funny. It ain't working, but you know, I do think it's something that people can, you know, if they're open to develop that, for sure. Yeah, absolutely, and it is a good point. And that's, I suppose, I keep emphasising the fact that I know I'm not particularly funny. You know, I keep saying that. I wish somebody would say, yes, you are.
But it is.
It's using humour, yeah. And it's about having a sense of humour and having an openness, for sure.
It also seems about playfulness. And we know playfulness is really important part of attachment and that. But I think humour is a really important way of being playful with kids. And play and playfulness is really important.
Yeah.
So, again, taking it away from having to be funny, it's being playful in a particular way.
Is there a cultural element?
Yes.
I've worked in the US and I've worked here and Central Belt, Scotland, Liverpool, Ireland. You know, I've got quite a robust sense of humour. And there's stuff we all be saying, which is hilarious. Take it to other countries, it just doesn't translate. I worked in Germany for a time. You know, the sense of humour is completely different. Mm-hmm. So is there any evidence that cultural differences?
Well, there is. In the literature, there very much is. That, you know, it is very context and very culturally dependent, you know. I'm aware of the fact that I'm mic'd up here, and this has been recorded, so I'm not going to be very abusive towards any other cultures or nationalities. No, but it is. Everybody does have their own culture, you know. Americans, my God, what can you say about Americans, you know? I'm joking, Mark. But no, it is. I mean, I actually, whenever I started doing this, I was looking at doing it across different cultures, and I was sending emails out to guys who I know, and for, you know, give me an example of a story that you used, you know, a bit of humour. I didn't get it, do you know? But they say it worked, it was effective, you know, and some things I'm thinking, that really wasn't very funny at all, you know? So, yeah, absolutely, it's very culturally dependent.
Yeah, I'm really interested in that idea of culturally dependent, because I suppose there's like a culture within each residential unit, and I'm just wondering about a lot of the uses and experiences of humour are very, very positive, but I suppose I'm also conscious that in particular cultures within units, humour is very much about avoidance of pain, and it can be very exclusionary as well, because it's like, this is how we have humour here, this is how we have fun here, and you need to join us, or you're out. And I just wondered how that had emerged from your research, or whether it had.
Not really, but from my own experience, I know that back in the early days, I would use humour to avoid dealing with serious issues with kids, you know. And when I copped that, I thought, well, that's not right, you know. And I was able to actually use that to get a young person to a place where they could maybe talk about something a little bit better, or a little bit more safely. It's like I say, at the very start, I said how complicated it is to define it, to use it, you know. Sometimes people just get it, some people just don't get it. Different places you go have different uses, different units at different times and different staff. It's so, you know, so variable. For me, it's an awareness. Once you know that you're doing this, once I knew that I was avoiding, you know, I could actually learn from that and use it to my advantage.
If I was sort of an inspector or whatever coming in to, as an external person or a young person just arriving, I think humour's a really interesting one, because it says so much about the culture of a unit or a service, and you cop on really quickly as to how that culture exists, I suppose, whether status and power are gained in those kind of...
Yeah, and it's very reflective of what's going on within people's own values and belief systems, you know, because like it is that, it can be such an equaliser. You know, you're one of us now, you know, we're all the same here.
I just want to make, Heather was taking the microphone away, so she was going to close you down. I just want to make one final comment for everybody. If you're interested more in John and humor, if you go to CYCNet, there's a series of half a dozen articles that he wrote specifically for CYCNet on different aspects of humor. So some of the stuff he was talking about today, he talks about a bit more in those articles. So just as a source for yourself, it's a good place to go.
And just on that was pre-PhD, that's when I was doing the research, so that's unsophisticated stuff, you know. Thanks very much.
You're a funny man, John.
Thank you.
Follow up,
yeah.
Will there be a follow-up to that article? Like maybe how you missed the bus and lost your sense.
That's a good one, Mark. Thank you. I didn't. Thanks.
I have to make an announcement before you leave. The results of the silent auction are now posted outside Track 2 room, which is this room. So if you bid on anything, find your winning sheet and bring it along with your cash to the desk to claim your prize.
Thank you, everybody.